Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Right. We're finally here, enjoying another episode of Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, good afternoon, Brew Strong.
And hey, howdy, hey, brothers and sisters.
You guys should pick one volume of your voice to use.
I just got thrown off track.
Hate running this show for you guys.
Got thrown off track.
How?
Keep it fresh.
Thrown off track?
Yeah, well, we're enjoying here is... what are we enjoying here, John?
Some Firestone 11th anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
Still? Saying, we were drinking that last month. When are you guys still drinking it?
Two weeks ago, yes.
Oh, sorry, two weeks ago.
Still, it's a big bottle.
Yeah.
It's a bomber.
Age as well.
Yeah, that's a great beer. Kudos to Matt Brindleson.
Mm-hmm.
My man love right there, Brindleson.
Yep.
And his crew at Firestone Walker. Good job.
One of my favorites, definitely.
Matt Brindleson or the Firestone 11?
I really didn't want to differentiate, you know.
Right, they're one and the same to me,
but yeah.
I would drink either one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Man code issues.
Speaking of which, we have the venerable John Blickman here in the studio.
John.
Howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Yes.
There we go.
Our sponsor for the show, and we also have Kevin Draken here in the studio.
Draken Bacon.
Yes. Draken Bacon, it was in a movie called Footloose, in case you don't know.
I think Tremors is
somebody's
really,
drunk.
Tremors really hit his peak.
Tremors was quite nice. Yes, I enjoyed that one as well.
I'm actually surprised he had the, you know, balls to not do a Tremors 2. Thank God.
All right, but they did do a Tremors 2.
Yeah, they did a Tremors show. They tried to do a friggin' series.
Right. Yeah. And didn't they do a 3?
They did a 4, bro.
They did a 4. Yeah. Wow, I've fallen
behind. The only person that was ever in all of them was that Hal guy. I forget his name.
Was 4 with the Tremors with Gremlins? Or
Tremlins, I think.
Yeah, one of them they had, like, they mixed in Gremlins along with the...
Did they really? I think so.
Didn't they? Yeah. I think that was 3.
Yeah.
That pretty much soured me on the whole thing. I mean, Kevin, why did you do that movie? I don't quite understand.
The money.
All right. Well, yeah, that's why you're living up in Tahoe. You know, to live up in Tahoe, it takes a fair amount of bucks. You got to be a famous movie star in order to do that.
But at least you didn't do the movie with Trolls.
The residuals from Footloose is, I think, that's one reason why.
We have a caller already. You want to get right to it or what?
Yeah, let's get right to it. Questions for John Blickman here?
Caller on the air.
Hi, should I spray tan or should I use the booth? I've only done outdoor tanning to this point.
What do you think, Blickman?
Spray tanning is so much more efficient, and I'm all about this efficiency. You can leave things uncovered very easily.
What's your efficiency of spray tan?
Oh, at least 82%, but you don't want to go too much because you'll get some harsh tannins.
You get some tannin extraction.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have anything brewing related for Blickman?
No, you guys are doing well.
Fair enough. Thanks for calling.
All All right, thank you. JP rules.
Yeah, he does.
And a reason why we don't take live phone calls on the show. Right.
I don't know. I thought it was pretty relevant. Yes. There's no topic. All Q&A, right?
Right on schedule there, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how that whole thing works. But yeah, we went up to Tahoe and...
He said wee-wee. Wee-wee.
Hung out with Kevin Bacon and his estate up there. And who knew Kevin Bacon was a homebrewer? That was the exciting thing for me.
And had some wonderful smoked chowder. Or how do you say that?
Chowder.
Chowder.
That's right.
Chowder.
And Jamil, you hear me? What?
And Jamil launched
chowder all over him.
Cheesy saliva onto my hand.
Launched it, huh?
Is that what they call it?
Launched.
And then he treasured it. Yeah, it wasn't saliva. It was cheesy, but it wasn't saliva.
It's more pineapple-y.
It was a bit nutty.
How do you want me to do this, Jamil? You just want me to go right to the phones whenever we get a call or tell you? Or what?
Sure,
do you want?
What the heck. Let's do another.
Yeah.
Here we go. Caller.
Hey.
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 You guys are there?
Yes.
Are you there?
So I'm not as on topic as the last guy. I got, you know, I'm even more far off, but I want to talk about some kettles and stuff like that.
There you go. Nice.
So I've been wanting to buy a couple Blickman kettles for a while now. I want to do like a 1560 or whatever it is, the kind of like the Morbier setup. But I don't want to do a flat tiered system. I want to have a two tier where I have like the mash tun and the hot liquor kettle and the boil kettle. Mm-hmm. The mash tun and the hot liquor up top and then the boil kettle down below. And I was wanting to use, recirculate my mash through mm-hmm. a copper coil through the hot liquor tank to keep the temperature. And I'm kind of wondering about this AutoSparge. There's not a whole lot of great information on it on the website and stuff. On Northern Brewer, I've read all their little reviews and stuff, and none of them were very good, so I thought I'd come to the source and ask John himself if that will hold up to like a pump pushing on it and stuff like that, and if it works really well for those kind of systems.
Yeah, the good question. We've really designed that to really be tailored for the home brewer, and it holds up just fine to your typical mag drive pump, March pump being the most common. A lot of them you'll see that are really set up for residential water pressure. And they have a very small orifice through them. Jamil's going to pick up on that later, I know. The small orifice.
Residential water pressure, yes.
Yes. he's all over that. Mm-hmm. And that's so that you can turn off with the relatively small force you have from a float.
Jamil's all about that.
Yes. So what we did with ours, since we knew we would be passing some grain particles, you also have the sticky sugar. We opened up the opening in there with a larger orifice so that we could pass particles through there. She wouldn't have any plugging issues.
Uh-huh. Malt bits and
malt
husks
bits
and stuff. Huh?
Right. And but we still have enough force on the float to be able to resist the
flow weight.
The dynamic pressure from the mm-hmm. your typical homebrew pump. So it won't be an issue at all. That's what I use in my brewery, and I've used that for many, many years.
And the one thing I love about the top-tier system is, you were describing how you want your mash tun, your kettle, and how you want your hot liquor tank, and you know, how I saw Kevin and his setup, and how I know John has his setup, and how I have mine set up. You know, they're all different, and you can do anything from a flat, you know, it's all one level, to any kettle can be any position over the other one or behind or alongside or however you want to have it. And you can change that once you've started brewing with it. You're like, you know, I'd really wish this was up, you know, 6 inches higher, or I wish it was 6 inches lower and I could see into it, or whatever it would be.
Yeah.
You can actually do that, and I think that is the brilliance of the top tier.
I moved
for
on.
Me
yeah.
is really, you know, that, well, and you know how you like it and how I like it.
Right.
like it is rough. But, you know, you know, other people may want it differently, in, you know, different heights or different ways of doing things. Or you like gravity feed, you don't want to work with pumps,
right,
or you're all about pumps or whatever. And, you know, what you want to do with the recirculation and all that, you can take, you know, there's all sorts of parts. There's pump mounting brackets, and there's the auto sparger. You can, you know, you can use, you know, any variety of equipment on that top tier system,
right,
and make it all configured the way you want. So you could take, you could do a RIMS, you could do a HERMS, you could do a direct fire, you could do any of that stuff on the top tier system.
Mm-hmm.
So
and using the auto sparge for any of those versions,
and that's the thing I like about it, is it's very flexible. It allows you to configure it the way you want, and you can mix and match. You don't have to buy everything from Blickman. Sorry, John.
Hey, we set up Kevin.
Right.
Kevin's got a mix of Morbier kettle.
He's got all sorts of different parts and pieces.
Couple keggles
from,
and
I don't want to seem like a homer, but the thing I really loved when the Tower of Power came out was you can stick that on to any piece of equipment anywhere. It's going to work. I mean, it'll tie into just about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really quite nice as well. I love that. You know, ability to adapt and to integrate all your parts, and it's like nothing goes to waste. You start off with this one piece, and you can just build on it, and it'll all fit into, you know, like a top tier later on. So I don't want to go on and on. People think it's commercial, but I thought it was for me that's great, because, you know, homebrewers don't have a lot of money to waste most of the time. So,
and not many homebrewers get to go out and buy the system they eventually end up with after 10 years of brewing. They get to cobble it together year after year, adding, subtract, you know, changing parts out.
Yeah, and, you're not.
You know, you're like, okay, this year I'm going to spring for the.
Yeah, I got five grand
for the
auto sparge. Let me,
and for the.
Is that good, caller? You good?
Well, I wanted to ask John about how his system is set up at home. Because he said he kind of has the same kind of system I was talking about. I just wondered how his...
Palmer or Blickman?
I don't think he's ever brewed. Either
Blickman.
One.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's all... Well, theoretically, I would.
Oh, Blickman, he's brewed.
I have a... I actually use an almost horizontal system. I've got... Because I brew in my basement, and my basement's got fairly low ceiling height, about 7 feet. And so I brew on mostly on one level, and I've got a RIMS system, electric RIMS system that I've set up. And it uses the March 809 pump, and I actually had a the original AutoSparge set up for a couple years before it just clicked. You know, I had to have this as a product, and that's when we developed it and started selling it for people. And it works great on the pump. I like it because it's simple. You know, whatever you set your drain rate to on your pot, the auto sparge is going to match absolutely perfectly. And I'd run my mash tun dry, overflowed it, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how I came up with what I came up with. But we had, when we used just a commercial one, we had some problems with it plugging every once in a while. And that's why when we developed the production one, we...
went with a larger orifice.
We did. Went with a larger orifice. Normally, I wouldn't prefer that, but... it worked great in this case, and then just opened up some of the tolerances, so you know you wouldn't get sticking from the wort sugars. So yeah, it should work great in a HERM system, RIM system, even with Kevin. He's going to get his set up just for gravity system. In fact, Kevin, tell us about after your brew day. We talked a little bit about wanting to change your configuration, maybe.
Yeah, right now I've got the top tier. Well, I should preface this by saying I've got the auto sparge sitting around, but it hadn't gotten hooked up for brew day, so I'm going to retrofit that onto a keggle that I've got.
We used up all our drill bits, and
we had to something had to give. We had to get to brewing eventually, but I've got my top tier set up gravity style. So I've got the hot liquor up top, and then the mash tun, then the boil kettle down below. But after talking to John Palmer and looking at his system, I think I might make some adjustments. I have a March pump. But
and that just got added to your system recently, right?
I've had it for about 2 years, but I use it for recirculating the mash, and I use it for the Whirlpool immersion chiller, but I think I could use it to push beer and move both.
You can lower that whole thing down
lower the
to where you can
down,
see into every
get rid
kettle.
Of the ladder, and at least have the hot liquor tank up top. I don't need to see into that, really.
Right.
And everything
that,
else keep down below.
You can lower that down and pump that liquor over.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a little reconfig. You can use the auto sparge.
Yeah.
You know, you can put your hot liquor on the bottom and your mash and your kettle on the same level, and you can just pump that hot liquor up, and the auto sparge will control the flow. It'll be perfect.
Yeah. All right, guy on the phone, what do you think about that? Are we done with you yet?
Well, I got another question, if it's okay, but I understand if you guys want to get me off the phone.
Oh, go ahead. One more time.
Yeah,
go
we
ahead.
Don't know your name, though.
All right. Yeah, my name is Matt.
Hey, Matt.
So I haven't done an all-grain batch. I've done a partial mash, but I'm kind of just going headfirst into all this.
Nice.
One question I've got for you guys is about sparging. That's the one thing that kind of, you know, freaks me out a little bit, is hitting my temperatures and all that, and, you know, sparging in general. Mm-hmm. If I open up the ball valve to my hot liquor tank, and that runs down to the pump, and I've never used a pump, so when I start using the system, it'll be the first time I use a pump.
Uh-huh.
I assume that water's just going to hang out down there until, like, the auto sparge falls down to where, like, the water starts running off.
Right.
And so am I going to lose a lot of temperature in that?
No.
I mean, I know I'm going to lose a little bit, but is it going to be enough to be a problem?
No, you won't lose a whole lot. You want to keep your sparge water temperature up, and you'll kind of figure it out as you go.
Yeah.
You know, generally target like 173, 175 for your sparge temperature, and that's plenty.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, any restriction you put on your flow, you want to put it post the pump, right? You don't want to put a restriction prior to a March pump. You don't want to starve it. You put it afterwards and let it, you know, push against the pressure. So if you want to control, throttle the amount of flow, you put it afterwards. The auto sparge is going to control that for you. Mm-hmm. And anytime it needs water, it drops down, the pump is going to go ahead and flow, and you should be good.
And you're going to want to set that auto sparge so that it is open when you're mashing. Because if you have it so that it's closed when you're mashing, you're not going to be able to prime that pump. So make sure when you set your auto sparge float that it's fully open, or at least mostly open. And
or
then
push down on it when you're priming your pump, which is the way I go.
So you open it up. There's a couple different ways. You really want about 2 inches of foundation water on the top of your grain bed when you're sparging. So you can just kind of lift the float ball up and just kind of set it so that it would be about in the middle of the ball, about 2 inches above your grain bed. And that's about right. And then when you drop it down, you'll have enough air venting so that you won't airlock your March pump. That's about.
Yeah. I'd like to offer an alternative.
Offer up, John.
Okay. No. Sorry. Cut him off.
Heavy sigh. I have my hot liquor tank set up about 5 feet off the ground. The burner's about 5 feet off the ground. And then both the mash tun and boil kettle are about, I guess the burner's about knee height. So they're down low. And I have, you know, those 180 degrees apart with the HLT behind them, behind the post. And I gravity feed my sparge to the auto sparger. And then I use the pump to slowly pump from the mash tun over to the boil kettle. And I have a ball valve on the outflow of the pump, so I can control that and set up a nice steady state flow from the HLT into the tun and then pumping out to the boil kettle. And that works really well for me.
Well, and that's fine. That's what I was saying at the beginning. We all have different ways of setting this up, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Now, what I have is the hot liquor tank is down below. You've got the kettle, and then you can set the mash above the kettle. So you can gravity feed off the mash, nice and gentle. You're not pumping your mash because you get shearing force in the pump, which is damaging to the wort. Yeah, it's the whole commercial brewer thing.
Okay.
The shear force is not good on that, but you're pumping your water up. So it flows the water from the pump through the auto sparge.
Which helps to keep your March pump clean, too.
Right, and then your pump's clean. It's only hot water.
All right, are we done with Matt now?
I think Kevin and I just slapped down
Matt.
The Palmer. I don't know. But, you know, there's no really right way or wrong way. Or there's no wrong way of doing it. I think there's multiple right ways, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't want to seem like a homer, but that's the thing I love about it is, wow, you know, the system, if it doesn't ship the way you want it, you know, you set it the way that you want it to work, you can do it.
I changed mine around after a couple of brews. It's like, tried it one way, and now I want to try it this way.
And you're still not making better beer. That's the problem. You know,
All right, Matt.
I got a book you could read.
Thanks for the call, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right. No worries.
All right, let's take a short break, and we come back. More questions with my friend, John Blickman. Back after this.
When you hear Blickman Engineering, think innovation, passion, quality, and customer service. Blickman Gear is designed by brewers to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. Like the intuitive beer gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles. The Therminator wort chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day. The Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial. The Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry. And much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BN Army in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted best night spot 7 times and best brew pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tailwagon Amber Ale and Double Secret Probation IPA, are the perfect accent to Riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and the BN Army Member Special. Wear your BN gear, get 10% off your beer. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub, where you'll feel at home.
A heretic is anyone who does not conform to an established attitude, doctrine, or principle.
If you love craft beer, you're already a heretic.
The very first thing we did when we started looking at the beers that we would brew, we got rid of all those recipes. We started from scratch. We've been pilot brewing the most creative things that we could think of and the most interesting things. We've completely gone away from style.
Heretic Brewing Company is opening this spring in Pittsburgh, California, and you can be a part of it. Visit hereticbrewing.com and facebook.com/hereticbrew. Get the latest updates on the brewery and upcoming beers. Show everyone how you celebrate great beer as a heretic.
It's a fairly powerful word. Being a heretic, that means you're not settling for ordinary beer. You are going with flavorful, creative, bold, interesting beers. A heretic is looking for the best beers out there.
Be a heretic. Don't drink ordinary beer.
Welcome to the Metal Shop.
This month, More Beer welcomes you to the place the magic happens. The More Beer Metal Shop. It's the place where unique products you can only get at More Beer are made.
go to morebeer.com and watch their new video about More Beer's metal fabrication shop and see how their custom brew sculptures, conicals, wort chillers, grain mills, and other proprietary items are made. Welcome to the Metal Shop, and all month you can save on a selection of innovative More Beer equipment. Only this month, and only at morebeer.com.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
Oh, thanks for joining us.
Beer.
It's good thing we have a caller on Skype. Tim.
Hello,
hey,
Tim.
Hey, what's going on?
I don't know. You tell us, man.
Nothing, just getting ready to run off my last 5 gallons of Hefeweizen, and I called in with a question for John Blickman.
Very good.
My question is, John, was there any solid cougar sightings this year? This is Timmy out in O'Fallon.
Timmy Renette. How I enjoyed the voice. No, there were no cougar sightings, thankfully, at the NHC this year.
I was concerned that you may have been stalked this year, much like you were last year.
I put on cougar bait.
Very nice.
Cougar repellent, I should say. Cougar repellent, so.
Very nice. Well, yeah, man.
You had a stalker? What's called that about?
I just wanted to call and say,
well, apparently cougar baiting.
So how you been, Timmy?
No, I'm doing good. It's life's pretty good out here, you know. I just knocked out about 10 gallons of wheat beer I brewed, and although a minor mishap along the way, the gasket to my hop rocket vanished, and maybe a dog ate it. Not really sure.
Kids, but, blame the kids. It's fail-safe.
What's that?
Blame the kids.
Yeah, well, maybe the kids. The kids stay out of the brew room for the most part, as you've seen. It's kind of scary in there, but no, it was good news. I was able to jerry-rig cut in a half piece of keg hose. Cut it in half and run it in there, and it managed to hold the seal enough to run the beer through.
So Tim, you have a question about Blickman products or brewing in general?
No, just called in to say hi, John, and tell him that no, I have no questions about his products. I love all of them. I'm running two Boilermakers and a hop rocket and a Therminator. So
apparently now we're running
the. Say hi real quick.
You
can cut me off, and thanks a lot. You guys are doing great. Appreciate all the work.
All right, Tim, peace out.
We're running the Facebook of brewing shows now.
Well, you know, you got to show love.
Oh yeah. Well, it's good to hear from you, Timmy.
We have a caller.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. Who's this?
Pseudo Chef.
Hey, Pseudo Chef, what's up, bud?
Not much.
What is your question?
So, I was recently gifted a Blickman beer gun, and I want to know the best way to clean it, as in, I'm going to be bottling, like, regular beers as well as a bunch of sour beers.
Sour beers, you say?
Yes.
It was masked by some noise here.
There was an explosion.
There was.
All right, so the way that I do it that I find is the easiest is, you know, once you've run your beer into your bottles and you're finished bottling, go ahead and fill yourself up a bucket of PBW, a beer line cleaner, warm, and open the valve in the bucket and let it gravity feed, let the rest of the beer in the lines pull it through, you know, siphon it through the beer gun, let the whole thing fill up, set the end back in the PBW bucket and let it sit there for, you know, 15 minutes, half hour. Let that kind of work on any proteins and other material that might have been there drawn along with the beer. Brett will form is a slime coating organism, and it'll put those slime producing layers on there, and that's what's hard to clean. So if you do it quickly after bottling, you should be just fine. You need a half an hour, 15 minutes of warm PBW. Then rinse with warm water. Same temperature as the PBW. You don't want to use colder than the PBW. You can use hotter, but not colder. Let that recirculate through, and then you can go ahead and run sanitizer through there. I also like to pull apart the pieces that do come apart, the hose off of the end and those various things. You can lock the little rubber ball end open. things like that. So you just make sure you're getting sanitizer all the way through. I think if you do it quickly after bottling, even with beers with bugs, Brett, bacteria, things like that, it turns out nice and clean.
Yeah, the whole product breaks down in seconds. Right. You can get it apart and give that a good soak. I like, if I'm really concerned about sanitation, I'll always use Star San. It's got the dodecyl benzene sulfonic acid stuff that tends to
but
get into the...
clean before you sanitize.
Yes, absolutely clean
PBW,
before you sanitize.
Then the sanitizer.
Yep. And, again, with Star San in particular, make sure if you're using mixed metals, you do not over-soak because you just have a giant electrolytic battery.
That's right.
And you don't want to damage your metal parts, particularly if you're using any brass in addition to...
Acid and different metals, that's how batteries are made. Mm-hmm. That's a lead-acid battery.
I can run my Prius off of Star San?
Yes.
And great. Beer guns. Yeah, Star San and beer guns.
That's
the propulsion
It would cost
device.
You a little bit less than buying a Prius, but...
I wouldn't look as douchey either.
No, I think that's a foregone conclusion. I just
saying. Wouldn't help.
Would definitely pull the little rubber valve seal, the little nubby on the bottom. Definitely pull that off. Be gentle pulling it off, and give that a good soak, and you should be fine. That's the neat thing about
that
beer gun reserves.
In there.
There really are not any nooks and crannies from any valves or anything where the beer flows, and we do include the cleaning brushes. That'll let you get a good soil removal of anything inside. So,
and I've yet to use. I'm very anal about cleaning things, and especially when it touches my finished beer, I'm very, very particular about it. But I still haven't used the brush to clean my beer gun because the moment I'm done with the beer, I'm running the solutions through. I'm recirculating them a bit. I'm using properly mixed solution at a warmer temperature on the cleaning and then the sanitizing. I really don't feel like I have any need to use a brush. Perhaps, every so often, maybe once a year, give it a good scrubbing of the brush. And it's nice that it's provided. It's hard to find that size brush, I think.
Is that why you're not entering competitions anymore?
No.
Just kidding.
Entering GABF, man.
I'm just kidding, man. All right.
So,
Pseudo, did we answer your question there, bud?
Yeah, that was perfect. Thank you.
It's
easy to clean. I think that the point is do it right away. Use appropriate chemicals and you're good. It's not an issue even if you're doing sour beers.
Yeah. How about an email question? What do you think?
Uh-huh.
All right. This one is from Jeremy. He says, I'm about a year in homebrewing. I have moved into all grain, and so now I'm doing full boils. Since I went to full boils, I know I needed a way to chill my wort without having to move my kettle into an ice bath. So I bought an immersion chiller. Well, my immersion chiller does a great job until about 95 or 100 degrees. Then it's gruesome the amount of time it takes to get down to pissing temperature.
Yes.
Or pissing temperature, for that matter. Living in the Southeast, the groundwater temps are tepid. Now that it's winter, it may be better, but this fall it took a long time to get the wort down without putting it in a fridge. I was impatient on my last batch and pitched my yeast a little too warm, 78 degrees. But I got lucky and blah, 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 blah. So right now my way of chilling wort is the immersion chiller or an ice bath. Lugging a full kettle around into an ice bath doesn't seem like my pint of beer. Especially after a few beers on my brew day, what would be my most economical way of chilling my wort down to a pitching temp? Should I just throw it in a fridge after my immersion chiller gets me approximately 85? Or are there other ways I can do this? Enjoy the show, guys. Keep it up, Jeremy.
All right.
I got this one. Yes, John has this one. And I know exactly what he's going to say because this is what I was just going to recommend.
Go ahead. Go
buy commercial beer.
No, I bought an immersion pump from Home Depot, and I immerse that in an ice bath and then pump ice water through the chiller.
Sump pump. And you can get them cheaper from places like Harbor Freight, whatever. You can get them for about $15.
Yeah, they're cheap. And all you have to do is just pump ice water through the and recirculate.
Well,
recirculate
the ice water. You don't want to pump it through once. And really, so...
What do you want to... You want to make sure that with the that actually isn't quite what I was going to...
Oh, what were you going
to
say?
The first 100 degrees are awful darn easy to get out because you have such a
use your tap water for the beginning.
Right.
Okay, and once you see a slowing starting to happen, you can switch to ice water with sump pump and recirculate it back. You set up a bucket with some ice, and water. You know, pump that water through. If you really want to push it, you can add some salt to it. People do that. I don't bother with that. But I pump ice water through my coil. The other big factor that's going to really accelerate, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
chilling
you need
is agitation.
And what now, John was telling me when we were brewing with Kevin here,
right?
He just I mean, the most economical, if you don't have a pump,
is to just swirl the chiller around.
Swirl the chiller around and keep moving.
Now, the thing about swirling the chiller around is that you tend to need to leave the lid off, which is dangerous because if you get dust and things like that falling
bacterial
in your beer,
stuff,
you're
going to
get bacterial contamination. So what? One thing I was doing, which I don't really recommend when it's hot, is you can actually tilt the pot just a little bit in a kind of a circle, and you can actually swirl the wort with the lid on and not moving the chiller. And I did that, you know, a bunch of times, and I actually like sloshed hot wort out, and that's when I came up with the idea of doing a whirlpool chiller and pumping it around instead of me swirling the kettle. But you can swirl that kettle. I would wait until the temperature drops before you do that, and you'll be surprised. You should be able to get within 3 degrees Fahrenheit of your groundwater temperature that you're pumping through.
Yeah.
And again, if that's like an 85 degree groundwater temp, then you're going to need to switch to ice, like John are saying. Get yourself a plastic bucket. Get yourself a sump pump. If you check eBay, you check Harbor Freight, there's a bunch of places that sell them really cheap. You know, half or a third or a quarter the price that you're going to get them. You can get them out of China for like, you know, $10 and $5 shipping. You know,
yeah.
And you
another way I've seen people do that
really
without
well.
A pump. Is they use a
funnel.
They use a 5-gallon bucket.
Right, gravity feed
and another
it.
Coil, but you're probably, it's going to be cheaper, right, to buy the pump than the coil.
Well,
or they use a
pre-chill
their cooling water, their hose water.
It doesn't work that well. You have to agitate a lot, and it really doesn't work that well.
Yes, you do have to agitate in the bucket.
The better way that I've seen done down in San Diego is get yourself 2 5-gallon plastic buckets. One, you raise up, and that's got your ice water in it, and you trickle it, gravity feed it through your chiller and back out into another bucket, and then you just transfer
just
it up, back up to the, if it feels cold, you put it back in the bucket up top.
That would have to be
through.
Your lowest cost version right there.
Right, that's your lowest cost. It's 2 buckets, you know, you could get buckets for free, but buy yourself like a cheap sump pump, and through there, plus, you know, swirl it around, or if you're, you know, lift the lid a little bit and wiggle your chiller around, and that'll be the best for low cost. And you'll be shocked at how well it works.
Absolutely shocked.
Yeah.
All right.
And how much is a Therminator? I mean, come on.
Therminators retail for just under $200. That's, you know, that's a real high tech way to do it. You know, you can, but still, you're still limited to cooling it to within a few degrees
of your. That's true.
Of your cooling water temperature, so
right.
You would
unless
need
you
to,
run ice water through it.
Yeah, so either way, you'd need to run ice if you've got that warm of groundwater temperature.
But it's a place in the process worthy of investment because that's the danger zone.
Exactly.
That's where you got to get cool. Get the yeast fermenting.
Fermentation. That's the borderline between the hot side and the cold side.
If you're going to put money in somewhere,
right.
Define that line.
Right,
and get
that's
across
true.
It quick.
Kevin Bacon with a
statement of brilliance.
Good advice.
With something. All right.
Have you guys noticed that he sounds like Kevin Bacon?
He does. And he kind of looks like him. He's looking more and more like him the more we drink.
I just kind of made it up, you know, to start. But now I'm like, I hear it.
I don't. Really
we were
at
watching.
All.
No, that was Patrick Swayze. Never mind.
John made me watch the worst movie. Ever made.
A Roadhouse?
No, it was on your TV this morning. Steel Dawn.
Second worst.
Steel Dawn.
It was pretty bad, but it was funny.
Steel Panther?
What you guys don't know about my friend John Palmer and John Blickman. Yes.
That was funny.
As we're up at 6 this morning.
Yeah.
God. All right, you got one more for us?
Yes, I do.
JP is just like, I love that they're the most, they're more fucked up than I am doing a show, yeah.
Well, I don't know about that. This one is from Brett, who's a corporal in the BN Army. He goes, first off, thanks for the great programming. Brew Strong, in particular, has really helped me in my first year of brewing. So here's my situation. I brewed an IPA using English malts and American hops. Original gravity was 53, and IBUs were about 58. I mashed in at 153 and fermented at 68 degrees. When I checked the gravity after a week, it was at 14, but all of my late hop character had been scrubbed out, and there were no residual sugars from my malt bill. I pitched Y-Yeast 1028 according to Mr. Malty, and there are none of the telltale signs of over-pitching. It's just too clean, like a very dry APA. So is this beer just too small? Best and thanks.
Well,
so
Barrette.
What happened to him?
Well, it's hard to follow all that, but you know, one of the things that I found was... All right, so there's a variety of possible reasons, and they all have a significant impact on late hop character. One is the hop supply and the amount of oils in it. Kevin, you're a big proponent of, you know, the amount of oils in a hop versus, you know, anything else about a hop. Hop oils are really where all the character comes from. You can take the same hop variety. You can have Cascades grown in the U.S. And it could be Yakima. It could be in Oregon. It could be Willamette. It could be, you know, Idaho. It could be wherever. And the oil can vary by 100% oil levels. And you'll get different characters from that. So just that you've added these hops at the end, you know, it could mean something. It could not. It could be that could be one of the issues. The other is... that the yeast that you use, depending on the, you know, how that yeast was grown up, you could have, you know, more surface area or less surface area, and those kind of things can affect the amount of, you know, hop character and bitterness that remain in a beer. The other thing is, you know, fermentation vigor. You have an excessively, you know, vigorous fermentation. You ferment hot, and that thing really blows off a lot of the aromatics. That can happen as well. It's good that it blows off a lot of the less desirable compounds, sulfurs, things like that. And the other thing that I found, and one reason that I go to the, you know, immersion chiller, was when I went to Counterflow, I lost... hop character. And, you know, I was excited about going Counterflow, but, you know, what's happening is the bulk of the wort sits hot, and that very last moment hop character I was losing, and, you know, it goes through at a small rate, and it gets chilled quickly, and that's great, but the rest of it's sitting hot, and I'm losing a lot of that. Now, the solution to that is either use an immersion chiller. And I like the Whirlpool chiller where you quickly knock the entire batch down, kind of lock in those volatile oils.
Right.
Or something like a hop back. Blickman has the Hop Rocket.
Right.
And there you put your hops in. It goes hot into that. It goes out through the Therminator. And you immediately lock in all that character. And that's probably the ideal. Mm-hmm. Because you're going from one, you know, from capturing it to locking it in with the coldness.
And that's what a lot of pro brewers do with the Whirlpool as they go into the heat exchanger, right?
Right. You know, we tend to let it sit, and it's just miserable. But I think better than what pro brewers are doing is something like going from a hop back into a heat exchanger real quick. And then, you know, you're trapping all those. That's going to give you the best. The next, I would think, is the Whirlpool chiller where you're knocking down the heat of the entire thing quickly. It takes a few minutes, so you're not quite locking in as quick, but that's really good. And the worst for me is, you know, slowly going through a heat exchanger without, you know, locking that hop aroma. Yeah. So, you know, those are all, for me, those are the things that affect late hop aroma.
Yeah. Well, you know, the one thing that's missing from this email is what his hop schedule was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no indication here.
Well, you got to assume he put in some late hops, but maybe he didn't. I put in only bittering hops. I used a quarter ounce of Magnum.
Yeah, but I mean, if he's doing a threefold edition, you know, 60
right.
half hour, 15.
Just move them all to the end.
Yeah, move them all to the end, and that'll kick it up a lot.
Right.
The only question I'd ask is how much blow-off you had.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that can lose a lot of the hop flavor and aroma.
And bittering as and well. Bittering, yeah. A lot of that comes out, sure. Especially if he's using the pitching rate calculator. You know, he's got a healthy ferment, probably.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
John, John B., you got any?
Yeah, well put. About the only other thing to consider would be, during fermentation, you do scrub out some of the aromatics.
Exactly.
Either way you do it. So another option is to dry hop. You just got to watch you don't dry hop too long so you don't pick up a lot of grassiness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you going to have a product for dry hopping anytime soon?
I think I will now. Just because you've asked for it, John.
Right. All right. Cool.
Well, and that's the thing. A real hot fermentation, excessive pitching rates, all those things can kind of collect, either blow off, like Kevin's saying, small fermenter, big blow off hose. can end up reducing a lot of the hop character or excessive fermentation vigor can blow off.
Even using that fermentation control Firmaid.
Firm K.
Or Firm K. There you go.
Yeah. That stuff,
Firm Cap.
Firm Cap.
Yes. Firm Cap.
There's nothing to do with
Firmaid K is like a rehydration nutrient aid for dry yeast.
That's Go Firm. Firmaid K is
Firmaid K is a
mid-fermentation nutrient.
Temp
control and the anti-foaming agent can help a lot.
Yes.
What he said.
But better.
Right.
But better.
Those things can assist in increasing bittering and a lot of other things. All right. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll all drink more and answer more questions.
And make out.
Back after this.
BN Army, HopTech has a great discount waiting for you. Do you often find it difficult to find specific specialty ingredients for your homebrew recipes? Well, listen to this. HopTech stocks 59 different grains to choose from, 39 varieties of pellet hops, and 8 kinds of whole leaf hops. And HopTech not only carries Y yeast and White Labs yeast for you, but also Fermentus, 04, 5, 6, 23, 33, and T58 Belgian yeast, plus Cooper's, Nottingham, and Windsor yeasts. Got your recipe ready to go? Pick up some great brew gear like new long and short sleeved shirts, games, and more. HopTech's new website is being updated every day with new items. If you don't see it, call the shop. They're open 6 days a week. BN Army and AHA members get a 10% discount, and active military personnel get 15% off. Visit HopTech.com today for great selection, great service, and a great discount. HopTech.com.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of our 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Our Williams Belgian Pale Extract is mashed with pure Belgian two-row malt and a small percentage of Belgian wheat malt for an authentic Belgian character you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out our unique fermenters, 2.5-gallon kegs, paintball tank-based draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and much more. We even have our own line of precision hydrometers. Go to WilliamsBrewing.com to browse our vast selection. That's WilliamsBrewing.com. Orders placed by 3:30 p.m. Pacific time ship the same day.
Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
Back to your hosts, Jamil Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
Kind of a weird vibe in the studio today. I think we're all tired and beat to death, and we've got Kevin Bacon to thank for that. Kevin, how's it going?
I thought it was Sir Francis Drake.
Yeah, I'll take that over Kevin. I don't know. Having bacon in the name, that's something of a
There's nothing better than bacon. Yeah.
Yeah. Bacon goes, makes yeah, everything better.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Even names, I guess.
Living the dream, baby. Living the dream.
Who had the bacon donuts at the NHC?
Voodoo.
Owen.
Yes, Owen.
From Hawaii.
The Voodoo Donuts. I've been to Voodoo Donuts.
Have you been to Voodoo?
It's excellent.
Yeah.
There's a reason that there's a long-ass line down the street, and you're like, I'm not waiting 45 minutes for no freaking donut. And then you do, and you're like, oh, yeah.
That was worth it. Yeah. I had one at the Nickel Diner in downtown L.A., and they are good.
Yeah, if you have a cold, there's a NyQuil filled donut.
That is
not anymore.
LA. How do you get a good Voodoo donut in LA?
It's been on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
How do you get a Voodoo donut in LA?
Do they sell Voodoo donuts at Sassy's?
I don't know.
There's two Voodoo donut locations that I know of, and
well, it may not be the same, but Owen brought maple bars that had bacon strips on them, so it may not have been a Voodoo donut.
Well, that idea's caught on.
Yeah,
that was meant to be.
It's because it's Voodoo donuts. If you haven't done Voodoo donuts, you got to do Voodoo donuts. You got to go to Portland. You got to get yourself donuts.
Okay, road trip. Right now.
Let's go. I got shit to do.
You're saying, I'm not driving all that way for a freaking donut.
Driving.
No, I'm telling you, you drive all that way for a freaking donut. It's worth it.
It would be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Because of quality. You know, all right, so.
Smoked porter, is that what you pair with that donut?
Well, this is the thing that pisses me off is.
Uh-oh.
All right, you can do all these, you know, funky, weird, interesting things, right? And there's a lot of businesses that they build their brand, and breweries that build their brand off of doing something weird. And, okay, you know, people will try it because it's weird.
Like a hoppy red ale or something?
Right, called Evil Twin. It's really not that great a beer, right? It's really not that great
a
product.
That's true. No,
because quality's low. Right. Like, the ingredients aren't that great. The way it was made isn't that great.
Or it's just not a good idea.
But you get something like, but even when it's not that great idea, if the ingredients are fabulous... Let's talk
like
Fatheads in Cleveland, and I haven't been to the one in Pittsburgh. I've been to the one in Cleveland, and I tell you, I would eat there time and time again. They've got these weird sandwiches on the menu, and the quality of every little scrap that goes into that is really high.
Yep.
And the people making it
are really high.
they're you know, it's quality ingredients, it's quality process, it's, you know, people that care about what they're serving. Mm-hmm. And I think you get the same thing in like Voodoo Donuts, you get the same thing in like Fatheads in Cleveland,
our sponsors
or
like Blickman,
you know, something
for that
like Heretic Brewing or Blickman Engineering. So you can do something that's weird. Something that's interesting. And Voodoo Donuts does a lot of weird stuff that you think it's like, oh, you know, it's marketing, it's schmaltz. It's backed with quality. And that's what makes it really good.
I don't know.
Quality ingredients, quality process. And it's like, okay, the marketing got me in here. The quality is just going to make me keep coming back. It's like you know, you're just blown away by, you know, good ingredients and good process and all that.
Can I just say?
Otherwise, you just wander away.
You're talking about a donut.
There's not a whole lot
of good quality things that go in a donut. Voodoo Donuts is all about the marketing and the gimmick.
No.
It's good, but have you ever had a bad donut? Have you
yes,
ever,
I have.
Really? In your entire life, you've had a bad donut?
Oh, I've had plenty.
You don't like donuts enough.
No, I have
I mean, with bacon on it? Come on.
I have a critical palate. I'm not like...
Well, that's true.
My mouth is not like a sewer like some people here in the studio.
I'm supposed to give you a high five for that rant, by the way. How about you? You want to do a question?
Have you been to Voodoo Donuts?
Yeah, I've been to Voodoo Donuts. Okay. And they were donuts. They were okay.
No, see, you're letting your attitude affect the quality.
Maybe you're letting your sunshine attitude affect your...
That could be.
I mean, I don't see how you can get good
quality... I was high at the
unprocessed
time.
...unprocessed or unbleached flour, so maybe, you know what I mean? Like, all-purpose baking flour
fried
fat.
No, there's a lot of other things that go into
it.
I mean, donut?
Yeah. The reality is...
Well, it's like make a sandwich. You go to Fatheads in Cleveland. If you haven't been to Fatheads in Cleveland, go to Fatheads in Cleveland.
I don't want to go to Cleveland.
Well, I'll tell you, it's worth
Cleveland
it for Fatheads. Just go there.
I'm fine with the Subway.
They got awesome beer. They got awesome food. And everything was just freaking outstanding. You can order anything off of there and just like, wait, now why? Because the guy who came up with the sandwich is a really nice guy.
Sure.
But I'm thinking, what the hell are you throwing these things together? Now, I'm not sure if it's a great combination or you're buying the best product that you can and putting it together in the best way you possibly can that makes it so freaking outstanding.
Sure.
Either way.
But this is what I would argue on that, is there's a severe difference in grades of meat and different meat suppliers and how meat is cured and like pastrami and all that kind of bullshit, right? But with donuts... It's either this way or this way with slight tweaks, and I don't think there's that much of a difference. But when you make with Fruit Loops or bacon, then you have that's the extra point that kind of makes it. So either you go the generic Safeway brand Fruit Loops,
then it's more
Fruit Loops,
then it's more then it's more dependent on process. All right, so if you're all taking the same,
I'm calling them.
If you're all taking the same flour, and all
Voodoo
that
on the line.
It depends on, like, you know, the grease that you're frying them in and all that stuff and how you're doing it.
Sure.
Right? So it's like how you ferment.
Yeah.
Everybody can buy, you know, White Labs or Y Yeast. Everybody can buy malt from the same supplier, right? Everybody can go to Northern Brewer and buy all the same ingredients.
Right.
Does everybody make the same beer?
Well, they're not.
No.
That was a good one, right?
There's much more complexity between brewing beer. It's not just brewing the beer.
Donuts?
They can make the same wort. Sure, they can make the same wort, but fermentation is where it's different.
But making donuts, I think, is quite complex.
Fucking love you.
We're doing a donut show.
We're doing a fucking donut show.
The hell with beer? We're doing donuts.
Yeah. Paxton needs to be on that because Paxton did several donut articles for Beer Advocate.
I'll call him right
and
now.
And I think Voodoo and Paxton need a collaboration beer, collaboration donut.
Get him on the freaking
phone. Is that what you really want me to do?
Sure.
A barley flour donut with bacon.
You know, being from Portland, I got to say, Voodoo, I think, is their notoriety is from their obscure ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that any of their individual donuts have blown my mind quality-wise. I think you combine certain ingredients and you
Kevin
get
Bacon
a pretty
throwing
amazing
me under the
thing.
Bus right
but,
here.
But I think that's where they're getting it from. Tang-rolled donuts. NyQuil-filled donuts.
Right,
you know,
that's what
I'm
saying.
Bacon and maple.
That's the base donut.
How could you argue with that?
It's just a donut.
That's what gets people in the door, but the quality of the basic donut,
I'm not saying they're bad quality, but I think it's what makes them known is not the quality, it's the obscurity.
Oh, sure. That's what gets you on
the
TV.
Creativity.
That's what gets you on TV. But you know that's the thing. You can get people into your location, but if the quality isn't there.
Right. If you can't deliver,
then the help with you,
Paxton.
Yeah, exactly.
See, you may have Paxton.
What, he's confused by hearing people on the air?
He might be. I don't know. Well, whatever. It was a failed experiment.
We're going to talk about Chimay Crullers.
I have a Golden Strong question.
All right.
What do you think? You want to get back to beer? Or you want to talk about...
I'm kind of worked up now.
I don't know. I think we should talk about crepes.
We should talk about Gordon Strong.
Okay. Dear Brew Strong Brewing Brothers, I love the show. I don't know why. I go to a university without a brewing science course, so I think your segments are the lectures I wish I got at school. He thinks that they are, but he doesn't know. I brewed a Belgian Golden Strong about a month ago. It had a 1072 original gravity. After about 2 weeks in the primary, all airlock movement had completely ceased, so I took a gravity reading and carried it down to my basement where the temperature is a consistent 60 degrees. The gravity at the time was 1015. Then 2 weeks later, with the beer still at this lower temp, I was getting ready to rack to my secondary, and I took another gravity reading. It was 1002. Now I know all the signs seem to point to contamination because it dropped another 13 points without any visible airlock movement. At the same time, though, I know the yeast is extremely low flocculant yeast, and it tastes free of contamination. My main problem is that now the beer is bone dry over 9%. I'm wondering if you could help me determine what went wrong and what you would do in this situation. I was thinking about making a lower gravity batch and blending the two. Have you had success? If so, blah-bitty blah. That is from Matt Levy, who works at our buddies, Captain Lawrence Brewing.
Captain Lawrence. Good folks.
You want to borrow my glasses? That print Scott is like Caro. A minus five
yeah,
font
but,
size.
But I tend not to be as old as you, and I can read it just fine. Right,
89?
So, yeah, you are. You act.
I feel like it.
Oh, two, huh?
I do act.
2 weeks in primary.
I mean, just because there's no airlock gravity doesn't mean your numbers have, doesn't mean it stopped,
consistent,
right?
Consistent.
That's the main thing. Yeah. I mean, right. Never. You gravity don't trust your eyes, trust your numbers.
72 to 2 is pretty big.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suspect a wild yeast at work.
Well, but it depends on this. He doesn't say what the grist is. So if he's doing a golden strong 1072 and there's 20 or 30% sugar.
Right. I think he did. I may have redacted it. You want me to try to examine it?
And he's crossed out in green.
Well, because, I mean, it's two
like,
paragraphs.
My
I'm
last
not going to read all
that. Has stumped me, and I'm hoping you can help me.
Yeah, I don't need to read that.
Figure out what happened and how to fix the situation. See, don't cut all that crap out. Just give us the facts, ma'am. Let's see, and the recipe, which would have been helpful,
yes.
But JP redacted.
Well, you could have asked. Hey, did he include
high security.
A recipe?
Hey, JP, what's the recipe?
And I, well, he's crossed it out, so he wouldn't be able to read it with his old eyes. And I brewed with 78% Belgian Pilsner malt, 3% flaked wheat, 2% caramel, 2% Munich, and 15% cane sugar. And used WLP 570. Started based on Mr. Malty pitching rate calculator. I pitched at 64, ramped up to 67 naturally, and after 4 days, raised to 72, and then on day 7, brought the temp up to 78. The dryness is making the alcohol come through way too aggressively. Well, the dryness and the alcohol are related. All right, couple of things. Don't turn.
I hit the wrong button. I'm sorry.
Couple of things. I'm the only one willing to talk here, and the rest of the people are chit-chatting.
One idea that came up was maybe calibration of instruments.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Water.
Was
distilled water?
I would wonder, about the initial readings. Mm-hmm. Just make sure that your initial word readings and things like that are correct, because that's a common thing that John and I run across.
Right.
We get, emails from people. It's like, oh, well, it's been this, that, and the other. It's like, are you sure you're reading it right? gravity doesn't go back up.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's gone back up like 5 points. It's like, well, it's probably carbonation. Are you degassing it, spinning the hydrometer, and like, oh, yeah.
And we're assuming he was not mistakenly using a refractometer after fermentation.
Well, that's true. I don't think that's the case. The 570, that can chew down there pretty good. And I don't see a mash temp.
But that's like 95% attenuation. Or better.
If it was a contamination, right. what sort of things would he be looking for? He says
lack of flavor.
Lack of flavor?
Yeah.
Or increased flavor.
But there's true. It's
souring,
not necessarily
phenolics.
Like a sour, but not necessarily, right? I mean, it sounds like he's doing a Belgian Golden Strong, so I mean the
phenolics
are going to
be
there anyway, right?
Right. Well, they might be masked.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
by
even though
he says
the
570.
So even though he says there's no signs of contamination, there actually might be. It's just the
right.
yeast he's using might be covering it up.
There's a lot of times where people say, well, no, it's clean. There's no contamination. And then you taste the beer and you're going like, yeah, it's pretty rank. It's like, oh, that was like my house flavor.
It's true.
That's one thing I ran into a lot is people just don't know. They don't know what a clean beer is, and not to put, you know, homebrewers down more than I do, but you know, that is a factor. That is, you know.
Well, see, and the thing that struck me, and you pointed this out, JP, was it dropped another 13 points without any visible airlock movement. And airlock movement is not the indicator of fermentation, mm-hmm. necessarily.
You taught me that.
And it's, you know, that's what made me think, well, you know, maybe the reading was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one way or another, or, you know, just didn't... Not that Matt is like you know, clueless or anything. I mean, most people aren't.
He works at a brewery. I guess he should know.
Right. He probably knows. But, you know, I've seen things where people, you know, don't fill the hydrometer jar up high enough, and they're, like, taking a reading. It's like, well, you know, you don't have enough wort in there or beer in there to actually get a reading, because the hydrometer's sitting on the bottom of the jar.
It's not floating.
Right. It's not floating. It needs to float. But if he's getting O2, I guess, was this at the brewery or?
No, it was at his house. I mean, it sounds like he's a home brewer, but he also works at a brewery.
Right.
Very good brewery, too, by the way. Captain Lawrence.
Yeah, you can roll out calibration very quickly with distilled water.
Right. Yeah. And even just tap water, because the minerals in tap water is pretty low.
All right, so we should call
it... Unless you're in Indiana.
You should probably call it a wild yeast or something.
I think Matt should send us some, and we will.
He can.
We'll taste it.
So, to the second part, what should he do? He's thinking about brewing another beer and blending it. Has anybody else done that?
Well, if it is a wild yeast, blending it's not going to help. I mean, the wild yeast
going to give more.
You know, just take off again.
Okay. I'm very counter to, you know, trying to correct one beer with another. And I guess, you know, now I'm a commercial brewer, maybe I might think differently, but I would rather just dump it and, you know, brew again and, you know, ensure that I was correct, you know, from the start, because you never, by blending, you know, problem beer with a good one, you tend to never get like great beer. You tend to get an okay beer,
mm-hmm.
in higher volume. Hard to say. Oh, this one has me stumped. I'm not sure what the issue would be there. Mm-hmm. I have 15% sugar. He doesn't say what the mash temp was. He doesn't say whether, you know, he's checked his calibration on the mash. Even then, O2, I mean, everything would have to be pretty much simple sugars.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's still some residual, because, you know, you look at something like wine,
mm-hmm.
you end up in, like, negative numbers.
True. Yeah.
So mm-hmm. That's within the realm. With 15% sugar and a really low mash temp, I think you're still within the range. So that might be it. That's a possibility. I don't know.
Stumped.
How does that particular yeast he used work at low temps? I mean, at 60, that's pretty low for an ale yeast.
But
he fermented at like 78, and then he brought it into the basement, which was 60, just to drop out.
But he got the last four Play-Doh at 60 degrees.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Well, if he lost suspension.
Well, 60 ambient, it could have been 65 in the thing, right?
Right. Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, the 570 will go, you know, most of those Belgian yeast will work through, especially the simpler sugars. So, yeah, hard to say. I'm stumped. I don't know. Stump the geekoid on the show. All right. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, a few more of your questions after this.
When Blickman Engineering set out to design a great brewing stand, they knew it had to be strong, adaptable, and last for a lifetime. The top-tier brewing stand is now proudly available at BlickmanEngineering.com. It grows with your brewing skills and equipment. Start with 5-gallon coolers on its heavy-gauge stainless steel shelves. Then move all the way up to 30-gallon pots on the high-output burner tiers. Speaking of burners, the custom Blickman Engineering top-tier burners are extremely powerful, efficient, and amazingly quiet. They have safety stops to center your pots pot, and they'll last a lifetime and won't rust. The top-tier brewing stand allows virtually infinite combinations from traditional gravity systems to two tiers to completely horizontal. Configure your stand the way you want and have the freedom to change it at any time in the future. Your brewing stand should adapt with you, not force you to learn a new process. Visit BlickmanEngineering.com today to configure your top-tier brewing stand and to find a local Blickman retailer. You'll be surprised with all the flexible features and the competitive price. Start brewing with Blickman from the top tier.
In a world where everything has been lost.
What happened to the city? It's in ruins.
Only one man has the ancient knowledge to restore civilization.
I need a drink. No, the liquor store's been ransacked.
You looking for beer, stranger? Boy, all the liquor got drunk up in the first 25 minutes of the apocalypse.
Wait, there's still some bottles over... Oh, no. Those are non-alcoholic beer.
I reckon you better stick to arrowroot tea and a desperate nomadic existence like the rest of us.
People, I'm a home brewer. I know how to make alcohol. Come with me if you want the beer. Okay, I'm gonna need some big plastic buckets.
He is the chosen one. The prophecies say that he's gonna get us wasted.
Someone start heating water.
From the creators of Northern Brewer, the people who brought you 7.99 Brew Saver shipping, massive selection, and superior customer service comes...
Hi, I'm Jamel Zanishev, and in addition to my work on the Brewing Network, I write the style profile column in every issue of Brew Your Own magazine.
Hi, I'm Sean Paxton, and when I'm not prepping for the Home Brewed Chef on the Brewing Network, you can find me writing articles on how to cook with your home brew for Brew Your Own magazine.
Greetings, Cretans. This is John Palmer, and when I'm not writing for Brew Your Own, I'm reading it.
John Palmer, Sean Paxton, Jamil Zainashev. If you love listening to them on the Brewing Network, you'll love reading their articles, tips, and recipes in the pages of Brew Your Own magazine. Join Jamil, John, and Sean 8 times a year in Brew Your Own. And when you subscribe to BYO on the Brewing Network website, half of your subscription price goes right back to the BN to support great beer and food programming. So sign up for Brew Your Own magazine through the BN website today so you can listen and read your way to better homebrew.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking Q&A with my good friend, John Blickman.
Is there something we don't know about your friend, John Blickman?
There's something you don't know about my good friend, John Palmer.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
The downer of the show.
Oh, John.
You have to be ready with this, JP. I'm just saying. What you don't know about my good friend, John Palmer. John.
Yes.
When he was in high school... worked as a dental assistant. Working the suction tube, weren't you?
That's right.
And he got fired.
Yeah. I didn't do it well enough.
didn't work his suction tube well enough. John Palmer, my friend, worked as a dental assistant in high school. True story.
True story.
My friend John Palmer. All right. Back to...
That was professional. Can I just tell you that yeah. Fucking fade out right on the point or post is what they call it.
Right on the erect nipple.
God,
yes.
I'm real good.
All right. Okay. Any more questions here before
we got a lot of questions, wrap this up?
We
got a lot. Let's do some from the chat because I've been ignoring them.
Let's do like one or two, and then we're transitioning into a new show here.
Let's throw it back to
one or the other.
John Blickman. Question for Blickman. Are there plans for a hop rocket mount to the top tier system.
Are there plans? There are not currently plans.
There are,
but
now.
We always love input from our lovely customers, and yeah, that's something that we'll have to throw in the mix. And see, the one other thing that we were even thinking about is a mount. Probably could hopefully try to use the same mount for mounting that inside of a refrigerator / freezer for a Randall mount.
Oh,
We love
John. John thinks a lot about mounting, I think. You know, my experience with him at Kevin Bacon's house up in Tahoe was that the famous actor Kevin Bacon. It was that he thinks about mounting a lot.
I do. A lot of thinking, but I need to do more implementation.
He was talking about, you know, mounting the little electrical probe there for the tower power snap-in mount. He's talking about you know, clamp mounts and
the drilling challenging
mounts. Yeah.
Despite the lubrication.
Mounting is always forefront on his mind.
But would you say the utility shelf, John, is a noble spot for the hop rocket on your top tier?
The utility shelf would be a great
mount
choice for that. And the nice thing about it is there would be plenty and adequate room to put your beer on the shelf simultaneously with the hop rocket.
Could you fit a tower power and a hop rocket on the shelf?
The tower of power and a single, yes.
Yeah.
Although electricity and water generally don't mix, so just keep those separated.
Oh, please. Come on.
GFI, you don't have to worry about it. There you go. Throw caution to the wind.
Or GFY, for that matter.
Yeah. Next question.
What is the this is for from Dog is my co-pilot in the chat room. He says, what is the ideal horsepower or gallons per hour for a pump to push ice water through an immersion chiller, a 50-foot immersion chiller?
See, you know, that's the problem with measuring pumps is horsepower and gallons per hour and all that crap doesn't mean squat.
Centrifugal pumps.
Right. You know, the amount of head pressure you might have, how low your supply of water is up to your pump, you know, the restriction through the coil, you're saying a 50-foot what diameter ID copper, how smooth it is, things like that, they're all going to have an effect. So you really want to oversize these things, but...
And then throttle them back with a centrifugal pump, right. You know, it's variable displacement. So you're going to want to use... I would be suspect of a 809 March pump having sufficient flow capability through anything but maybe a 5/8 inch pump.
I use it on my chiller and it's no problem.
How long is your coil and what diameter?
It's what, half inch
ID
and
tubing would be
OD and it's 50 foot, and the March pump has no problem with that, but I think the question is, if you use something like a sump pump, if you're looking for the cheap pumps, because if you go online, you go on eBay or whatever, the ones that are saying like 1,500 gallons per hour, 3,000 gallons per hour, some ridiculous numbers, those are far capable of doing it. The ones, and you can get them down to like $15 if you're looking at ones that, you know, it's like 1,000 to 1,500 gallons per hour, I think, is what they're talking about. And what they're going to deliver is like, you know, 100 gallons per hour. And we have Chris Kennedy and Erica Kennedy in the studio.
And those are going to be most centrifugal. Yeah, most centrifugal pumps are rated at a very low restriction, and depending on the impeller design and other variables, they drop off.
It's a restriction that doesn't, yeah.
And quickly or not.
You know, if you buy one of these cheaper pumps and you find that it isn't quite working, just raise the source water up. If you have it laying on the ground and you got your coil above it, you know, put it up on a step stool or something. Get it up the same level as your coil, and you have far less problems with it.
And key thing there is, you know, the larger diameter copper tubing you can use, the less restriction you're going to have.
Right. So, there you go.
Sounds good. Last question from the chat. from Fume 420. Get it? It's like pot smoke and things.
Right.
Okay. Question for...
Did I tell you we have Evil Cousin coming up?
You did tell me that.
Yes. So, Heretic Brewing, we got Evil Cousin being kegged.
And why is it?
Monday.
Well, it was all Chris's idea.
Yeah, Chris is going to do it. It's, yeah, Chris, like a pothead or something like that. I don't know. He's like, hey, cousin, let's do it. Let's do a beer called Evil Cousin.
What is he, tally now?
Yeah, he's tally. He often does a tally. Hey, there's microphone and headset for you right down there, Chris. Jump in. Yeah. Go ahead.
Try to defend yourself.
Don't move so fast.
Explain to people how I'm wrong about how this went down, how we ended up with an Evil Cousin. But we were there, and I don't know. It just happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, Evil Cousin is basically it's a necessity IPA. We were just sitting down. You know, there's another hop shortage currently going on. More selective hop shortage, mostly with a lot of the citrusy American Hop, Simcoe, Citra, Amarillo, good, those kinds of hops. And those happen to be some of my favorite hops to put in an IPA. And so when we decided to make a really like a strong hoppy IPA, a double IPA sort of beer, we were just starting to discuss what sort of hops we would want to have in it, and we were just looking at the available hops. And
I think that was kind of it. It was like, well, we can't make, you know, the kind of strong IPA we would want. It's like the only thing you can do is something dank.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, yeah, we could call it Evil Cousin.
Yeah,
and then we're like, yeah, okay, we got to do that. Yeah, that sounds good. Well, and all you guys, you had a sample of Evil Cousin at the brewery there before we came down here, and
yeah, it was
hoppy as all get out, huh?
A lot of hop flavor in the beer. I mean, almost, you know, you almost couldn't taste the malt.
Resiny.
Yeah.
Dank. Somebody said dank. I think Kevin
reminded
said
me
dank.
A lot of one night stands.
Very intense.
What does that even mean?
I guess we'll never know.
Yeah.
It dropped nice and clear. I was pleased. I pulled the sample off the Zwickel, and I'm like, wow, that's clear.
That's a good thing. Clear beer is good.
Yeah, yeah. And it's still nice and dank.
Now, that reminds John of a lot of one-night stands. It was real clear in the morning, which is fine. Can I read the question, or?
Sure, or go ahead and read the question.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying. Might be a change of pace. From Fume 420, question for Jamil. In brewing classic styles, are the fermentation temps done with a thermal well or another method? And, of course, thanks to Brew Strong, Jamil Show, and even Sunday Session, my beers are turning out, blah, blah, blah. How did you take those fermentation tips?
That's what I love about JP. He reads all the things or adds in things that say, oh, JP, you're great, and it skips all that.
I would never add that in.
Yeah,
I never add
that. Neither would we.
Right.
Right?
Hey. So when I check temperatures, I tend to brew in carboys or better bottles. I just tape the probe to the outside of the fermenter, and then I cover it with a big old wad of bubble wrap, like 3 inches thick, and that's what I do. So it's, you know, people say, oh, that's not measuring the beer. Yeah, it's measuring the beer. The difference between that point on the beer and then the center of the beer is like a half a degree. So
I actually ran an experiment where I used the same probe taped on the outside with IZ aluminum duct tape, and tape it on just because it stays better on wet stuff.
Right.
And I actually don't put an insulation over the top, but that's a great a great plan. But I actually did that, measured it, and took the exact same probe.
It's probably really close.
And it was less than half a degree using the same probe. So there's no difference between the sensor and meter.
The liquid in the fermenter would have to be so static. And even then, it's going to, the temperature is going to, you know, conductivity is you know, huge. Convection, I mean, you can set up, you know, thermal layers and, you know, in liquids. But, you know, if there's even the slightest movement, that breaks down. So, you know,
and anytime you're going to have a difference in temperature, you're going to have convective flow.
Right. I mean, it's possible in something like Lake Tahoe, where it's a big volume of water that we've been at, and you know, you can actually see the thermocline. Yes. You get down there and you can see the layer in the water, but
it's about crouch deep.
I feel the thermocline. But other than that, you know, and you throw a little insulation on the outside, and it's
yeah. Homebrew scale.
Same, so
it's not worth the contamination risk or the headache or the expense. You can't beat a piece of duct tape for cost-effectiveness.
I wouldn't bother getting a thermal well on a fermenter or anything like that. Just tape it to the outside, cover it. You're good to go. And so all the temperatures in the Brewing Classic styles are the temperature of the beer, and that's how it's measured. So
I forgot the question. Great. Anything else you want to say, Jamil, before we take off?
Before we take off? Fellas. Gals, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to AdamandEve.com. For a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. And that's not all. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration, plus a free extra gift so essential we can't mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, they'll throw in free shipping on your entire order. So check out AdamandEve.com today for this special offer. You'll get 50% off one item when you type Jamil, J-A-M-I-L, for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you also get the 3 free DVDs, and those are DVDs of your choosing, not just random things sent to you, and a free extra gift and free shipping. So just use the offer code J-A-M-I-L at AdamandEve.com today! Another fine episode of Brew Strong.
Well, it was an episode.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fine.
It was fine.
Fine that it's done.
Get her done for barley, man.
Yeah.
This is the kind of fine programming you are paying for, Mr. John Blickman.
I'm just trying to stay solvent. You guys are barely helping.
And I tell you, all you folks listening, if you want this guy to keep paying for the show, you better, like, you know, get to his website and start smooching some ass here.
We haven't impressed him today.
Don't be looking at AdamEve.com. Be looking at BlickmanEngineering.com and doing your ass kissing there. Yeah, yeah. Go there. Yeah. Get your wood on and. Or maybe go to AdamandEve.com first.
You go there, get yourself excited.
Then go to Blickman and tell him how much you love him.
Yeah. Well, you buy something for your partner, your brew buddy, if you will. And then you go to Blickman.com, and then you go to Northern Brew, and you visit all of our sponsors.
Right.
But satisfy the boss, and then you can buy the goodies.
Right. And then just downhill. Prioritize this.
We've all been drinking. So just tell him how much you love him and how much you appreciate that he pays for the show so you don't have to. If you get a chance, check out the Brewing Network store, brewingnetwork.com/store, and check out the goodies there. All that you buy there goes to the bottom line of the Brewing Network and really helps keep this stuff on the air. Until then, brew strong.
Brew strong.